It's tough taking no for an answer. As children, we all felt those no's when our parents denied our requests. There are times when the answer to a believer's prayer is a clear no. We have a choice. These times can either make us resentful or they can increase our faith. Today, how to react and respond when God denies a petition we make to Him. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Today, we continue a series on the triumph of unanswered prayer. Listen now as Erwin Lutzer talks about what to do when the answer is denied.
If you were to ask people why they don't pray seriously and why prayer isn't really that big a part in their lives, I believe that 90 or 95% would say it's because of unanswered prayer. That's the reason. It can happen even when you're small, little. A little girl prayed that the doll that was in her arms would become a real baby. And when that didn't happen, she was disappointed with God. Aren't you glad that God often doesn't give us what we ask for? The teenager who prays that his teeth will be straightened out so that he won't have to wear braces and then discovers that God doesn't answer begins to think, well, what is there to this business of prayer? But usually, of course, the issue is much more severe and much greater. It has to do with a young mother dying of cancer. It has to do with Johnny Erickson Tada in a diving accident in the late 60s, existing for 40 years by now, I'm sure, in a wheelchair. That's what it has to do with. It has to do with families and abuse and all of those things. But at the end of the day, people would say it's because God doesn't answer prayer. Why should I bother? Well, there's a very interesting and famous unanswered prayer in 2 Corinthians chapter 12 that I want you to turn to. And if you didn't bring your Bible, there's one there in the pew that you might be able to use. This is not 1 Corinthians, this is 2 Corinthians chapter 12. The Apostle Paul was caught up to the third heaven. He was caught up to paradise. And there in paradise, God gave him specific revelations that were wonderful and great. In fact, Paul says, I heard things that I'm not even going to tell you about. How different he is from some of the folks that we see from time to time on TV who'd only be too quick to tell you what new revelation they've received. Paul says that I had this experience. He's talking about himself in the opening verses. He says, 14 years ago, I was caught up to the third heaven, verse 2. I don't know whether I was in the body or out of the body. I know that this man was caught up into paradise. And he says in verse 4, he heard things that cannot be told, which a man may not utter. So the Apostle Paul says that in light of this, I received so many revelations. And of course, he wrote 13 or 14 books of the New Testament. The book of Hebrews is disputed as to who the author is, but Paul wrote a good part of the New Testament, and Paul says that if I were to tell people of the revelation, and if they know that I am, that to me this revelation is given, they are going to honor me so much, and when they honor me so much, I'm going to be tempted to begin to think that I'm special. And so God says, Paul, what I'm going to do is to give you a thorn in the flesh to keep you humble. That's why we pick up the text in verse 7, and I'm going to read. So to keep me from being too elated by the surpassing greatness of the revelations, a thorn was given me in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to harass me, to keep me from being too elated. Three times I pleaded with the Lord about this, that it should leave me, but he said, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly because of my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. For the sake of Christ, then, I am content with weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, calamities. For when I am weak, then I am strong. Don't you want to say, wow, after reading that? Couple of introductory questions. First of all, what is this thorn in the flesh, the Greek word scolopsis? What is it? What is the thorn? Well, it's a stake. And it was the kind of stake, you know, upon which people were impaled. It was a horrendous way to die. This leads people to think that maybe the thorn was a physical ailment, maybe an eye problem. There is some indication that Paul had problems with his eyes. Maybe malaria, which evidently brings a pain to your head. It's like someone taking a hot iron bar and just pressing it against your forehead, someone has said. Maybe it was malaria. John MacArthur goes to great lengths to try to show that actually the thorn in the flesh was very probably a false apostle indwelt by a messenger of Satan, namely a demon, who stirred up opposition against Paul. So the thorn in the flesh is not defined so that we can insert our own thorn into that particular slot. So the thorn may be a health problem. The thorn also may be a person. I hope it's not the one whom you married, but it could be a person. And we've all known what it is like from time to time to having people who are thorns in the flesh. Paul gives us a lot of latitude. He says, I'm content with weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities. That pretty well covers what the thorn might be. Now, normally we don't vote here at the Moody Church as to what I say. I simply assume that you accept what I say. I hope that it's biblical. And if you disagree with me, that's no problem. You come up later and you have the opportunity to ask my forgiveness for disagreeing with me. But today we are going to vote. Let me ask you this question. How many of you would say that the thorn was from Satan? Raise your hands. How many of you would say the thorn is from Satan? How many of you would say that the thorn was from God? Raise your hands. Even more hands for that. How many of you have no opinion at all about theological matters? Now, here's the most important question. How many of you raised your hand twice saying that it was both from Satan and from God? Could I see your hands, please? You're the theologians. You're the theologians. Of course it's both. The immediate cause, the text says, was a messenger of Satan. But the ultimate cause is God. It was given to me of God to have a thorn in the flesh. If you don't understand the relationship between God and Satan in these kinds of trials, you're never going to be able to exercise the kind of faith that you need, the kind of faith that I'm going to describe at the end of this message. Just like Job, was his trial from God or the devil? Well, it is the devil who did all of the terrible things to his family, etc. But what does Job say? The Lord gave and the Lord took away, because the ultimate cause is God. Satan cannot wiggle unless God gives him permission to wiggle. And therefore, this thorn was from God. Well, now let's look at the prayer itself. The prayer itself. First of all, the specific request. I'm here in verse 8. He says, verse 8, three times I pleaded with the Lord about this, that it should leave me. What do we say about this request? First of all, it was very specific. God, you have given this to me, whether it's a person or a health issue. You've given it to me, Lord, and I ask that it might leave me for your glory. And God, you'll get all the credit. I'll talk about you as a result of this. You will receive the glory. Do it, Lord. It was specific. It was persistent. I pleaded with the Lord. Same word that's used in the New Testament for people who came to Jesus wanting to be healed, and they pled with Jesus to be healed. Paul says, I am pleading with God. Take it away. The first two times, God said nothing. Dead silence from heaven. But then the third time, after praying the third time, God spoke to the Apostle Paul and gave him the reply. And the reply, in effect, was, Paul, the answer is no. Now, God didn't say that directly, but God clearly said that you will keep the thorn, but that's not the end of the story. That's not the end of the story. God never leaves us stranded. He never leaves us without what we need to endure a trial. Now notice what God says. He says, my grace, I'm in verse 9 now, is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. God says, Paul, I've got something else for you. I've got grace. Grace. Paul thinks to himself, surely there's a misunderstanding. I asked you, Lord, very clearly, we laid this on the line, that my thorn was to leave. God says, keep your thorn, but I have grace. And grace is heavenly strength for the need of the moment. Grace is a river that runs to the soul that brings healing. Grace is the river that runs to the soul and also provides calmness and a sense of acceptance and hope and even gladness, as Paul says he has after the answer. Grace is indeed given to us. God says, I am going to take grace and it's going to be like an elastic band that is going to stretch over your thorn and over your difficulty in such a way that you are going to be able to endure it. That's what I'm going to give you instead. Grace is a wonderful pillow upon which many a weary traveler has laid his head. So God says, I'm going to give you grace and I'm going to give you strength. My grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in weakness. My power is completed. Paul, if people want to honor me and give me glory, you have to be weak. And so I sent you this thorn so that when you are weak, then my power will be displayed and my strength will be made complete. Well, my friend, this is Pastor Lutzer. It is very clear from this passage of Scripture that weakness is no barrier so far as God is concerned. Weakness in our lives can be overcome by an extra measure of God's grace. This message is so critical. I know that you're going to tune in next time so that we continue this series and so that you understand better where this message is going. Because I can't think of any way that God could possibly communicate to us the importance of trusting Him in the midst of unanswered prayer than in thinking about Paul's experience. I'm speaking to somebody today. You think that your burden is too heavy to bear. The doctor has told you news about yourself that you thought could only be true of someone else. Maybe it's a broken relationship. Perhaps a spouse has died. Perhaps you have a wayward child. Maybe you've lost your job. I'm here today to tell you that as you and I wait before God, God's grace will stretch till the need of the moment. Unless, of course, we continue to harbor sin in our lives and we continue to live in our rebellious ways. Above all, stay tuned next time as we complete these segments.
Dr. Erwin Lutzer, beginning When the Answer is Denied, another in a 6-part series on the triumph of unanswered prayer. Tomorrow, why the grace God gives can be a better answer than the one we asked for in the first place. Running to Win comes to you from the Moody Church in Chicago. As a help in working through unanswered prayer, this series will be sent on CD as our thank you when you give a gift of any amount to support Running to Win. Just call us at 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Ask about the triumph of unanswered prayer. Online, go to offerrtw.com. That's offerrtw, all one word, .com. Or write to Running to Win at Box 11174, Chicago, Illinois, 60611. This is Dave McAllister. Join us for tomorrow's Running to Win.